Claire Bloom has been a working actress since she was 15 and a star since she was 21 when she appeared opposite Charlie Chaplin in the 1952 movie Limelight. In dozens of roles since then, on the stage, in films, and on television, she's performed in everything from Shakespeare and Ibsen to Woody Allen, and most recently played Queen Mary in the Academy Award-winning film The King's Speech. She'll be interviewed on stage by film historian Foster Hirsch tomorrow night at the Film Forum on West Houston Street, and I'm delighted that it has brought her to our studios just a few blocks away to talk about it. Hello.
Hello. It's nice to see you after all these years, my goodness.
Yeah, for a while I thought you were going to become a regular on our show. You visited so many times, and then I guess you just moved back to London, and we haven't seen you very much.
Yeah.
You've appeared in many films and television productions, but you said in your first memoir, Limelight and After, The Education of an Actress, that your greatest love is for the stage. Is that still the case?
Yes, it is. I mean, it would be a dream to do one more wonderful part. But I just to be very happy, be thrilled to do one great part in a movie.
Mm-hmm. In a movie, well.
In a movie. And I've come to enjoy movies more than theater. I'm
really?
Afraid, yeah.
Is that because you can do another take?
No, I mean seeing them.
Enjoying
actually the doing, I prefer.
Well, you were
I
working
like the excitement of a play. I do, still do.
Well, there's something about the audience even gasping or...
Or the opposite, whatever they do. Yes, it is. Yeah.
You were working actress at 15. Was that in theater?
Yes, of course, yes.
Was it that something that you did out of love, or was it a necessity?
A little bit of both. No, I did it out of love, but luckily I started to make money. We didn't have any.
Mm. So you became the main source of income for your family?
Yes, I suppose I must have been. I didn't realize it then. I didn't think of anything like that. Yes, looking back, yes, I was.
And you quit school when you were still in your early teens.
14, you were allowed to then.
Now, you appear to have been well-educated, and you've even produced some well-written books. So you just picked things up along the way?
I picked things up, yeah. I haven't picked up enough, and I feel there are huge gaps in my knowledge. I didn't think going to school longer would have altered it, but having a wonderful teacher, or I didn't come across that.
Well, maybe it's the accent, Claire. It definitely sounds educated.
Oh, I see what you mean. Thank you.
But that's something that you learned as an actress?
What?
The upper, I don't know how we would describe that accent, but
I
it's an upper
it's
class.
I hope it's not upper class. Oh, no.
Well, it's not annoying.
I'm not upper class, that's for sure.
You had an aunt who was an actress. Yeah. Was she an influence on you?
Yes, a great influence on me, she was.
You were very close to your mother, who was one of your best friends and some various critics. What kind of notes would she give you on your performances?
They were always very accurate, and I always resented them bitterly and told her she was wrong and then found out she was right and did them, and she was right.
Now, notes are different. Go ahead.
No, she just had an unerring eye and ear.
Mm-hmm. Notes are different than reviews. Are you one of those actors who refuses to read the reviews?
No, I do read them, with horror usually, sometimes with a certain amount of pleasure. I think, first of all, you can't resist reading them. If you don't read them, then somebody will say, oh, I didn't agree what they said about you in the Times. I thought you were very good. So you might as well face the music. But I find it difficult, and of course I find it painful. But I also, if you're praised for, say, one particular moment, when you become terribly self-conscious about it and sometimes can't recreate it again.
And that's what I was bringing up, because a lot of actors complain about just that. Claire Bloom was magnificent in the
that
balcony
moment.
Scene.
Yeah.
And the next day you go out there and you think, well, what did I do?
Yeah,
and
I better be magnificent. Yes, exactly.
What about playing Juliet? How old were you when you first played Juliet?
I was 20. It was the dream of my life. Still looking back, there's nothing like it.
Well, how do you resolve the contradiction inherent in that role, that it takes mature technique to do Shakespeare and that role, but Juliet is 13 years old.
14. I don't know what mature technique is. So
at that time you didn't?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You must have studied.
No.
You've just learned along the way?
Mm. Yes. But Juliet, you've got to be young. Of course you can't be 14, because you simply can't do it. But that youthful fervor and romanticism, if you don't have that, you can't play it. And it, that has to go if you're not insane, you know, after a certain age. But yes, actresses used to play it at 40.
Well, on the stage, it's a little different than in film, because you can look younger. Theater acting is a lot about body language.
Yeah.
But when you're, the camera's on your face, there's no way
you're going to look 14.
You can look 14 at the age of – how old were you the second time you played Juliet?
The second time, 26, 25.
Is that too old, do you think?
No, but I wasn't as good as I was the first time.
In Limelight and After, you described working with Charlie Chaplin, who directed the film and starred in it, as Calavero, the tramp comedian. Were you intimidated to work with somebody who was one of the most famous men in the business?
Oh, well, before I met him, I was utterly terrified, obviously. Who wouldn't have been? From the moment that I met him, I was never frightened of him again. I totally adored him. I never forgot who he was. He was Chaplin and so. But as a friend and as a colleague and as a mentor, I was never frightened of him. I simply adored him.
But you've acted with an awful lot of legends in the business. Do you get past Laurence Olivier, the myth, very quickly? Or John Gielgud?
John Gielgud's different. John Gielgud I've acted with a lot, and I acted with when I was very young, etc. Olivier, well, you know, all young girls had this vision of Maxime de Winter and Heathcliff. And that was there. It was always there. And I was very much aware that he was a great, great actor. I'd seen him so many times when I was in my teens.
Well, I've always wondered about Cary Grant. How does anybody just be natural with Cary Grant?
I don't know. I didn't have the chance.
You would have liked to, I assume.
Oh, yes.
I interrupted you.
Adored him. No, that was it. I mean, no, I never forgot who Olivier was. Nonetheless, we acted together. I was at least 20 years younger, 25 maybe, than he. But those things disappear when you are acting, especially a very intimate scene, a great sexual scene, as the scenes of Lady Anne and Richard are.
But I think about the different acting styles of these people. You describe Chaplin's acting style as very old-fashioned.
I shouldn't have said that, did I?
But it's true.
Well, it
was a sentimental film, and maybe if he had played it straighter, it wouldn't have worked as
God,
well.
I feel awful that I said that, because actually it wasn't old-fashioned. It was, after all, he was what he was. He was born in 1889. He had seen, we're all formed by what we see and the world around us. And he, as much as anybody else. But his genius surmounted anything of that.
He plays violin in the movie. Did he know how to play?
Yes, he did.
And Buster Keaton played piano?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You were a young ballerina in it, and it appears as though you actually were doing the dancing. Did you have to do any of those scenes a la Natalie Portman?
I did quite a bit, but it was the great Melissa Hayden who danced for me.
Mm.
And with Andrei Glevsky. And it's very clear in the credits in the beginning of the film. But people love that film so much, and I'm happy that they do. They don't want to think that. They want to think it was me. Of course it wasn't. If I danced like that, I would have been also dancing with Balanchine.
So this is part of the magic of film,
of
that
course.
Chaplin was able to make us believe that you were doing the dancing.
Yes, and I had trained. I trained, gone to ballet class. From the time I was 9 or so, and trained with a very great teacher called Vera Volkova, too, for 4 years. I knew what I was doing. I couldn't do it.
I'm speaking with Claire Bloom, who will be going through a much longer interview tomorrow night on stage, interviewed by the film historian Foster Hirsch. That's at the Film Forum at 8 p.m. I mentioned some of the actors you've been with, also Richard Burton, Paul Scofield, Rod Steiger, Paul Newman, George Scott, Julie Harris, Vivian Leigh, Jane Fonda, many others. Are there any traits that the great actors have in common? Because they do represent such a wide range of styles.
Yeah, no. Not an interesting answer, but no. I mean, everybody is quirky and different.
But then you have to somehow adjust to their quirks, don't you?
No, I don't.
You just do Claire Bloom and let Paul Scofield do Paul Scofield?
No, you do Ophelia and he does Hamlet.
You're getting into
the character. You're playing a part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're known for doing Shakespeare and other classics, but you appeared on a television soap opera as the villainess, Arianna Grimaldi, on As the World Turns, for 2 years in the 1990s. How do you approach that kind of soap opera role any differently?
Yeah, very differently.
But that's like theater in an odd way, isn't it? Because,
no.
Well, you have to learn the lines and go out there and do it in real time.
Yes, but it really is not like theater. It's not like anything but what it is. You have to first learn it as quickly as you possibly can, do it as accurately as you can, try not to drop over and have a heart attack on screen, and they'll print it. But it was not as bad an experience at all as I had thought it was going to be. In fact, it was very pleasurable, and it came at a very, very difficult time of my life. It was about 18 months, not 2 years, but I did other things too. I wrote my book at the time. I went every weekend and did my Shakespeare's all over the country, and I did that. They were very, very kind people and lovely group of people that I was acting with, and we laughed a lot, and I earned a very nice amount of money and was financially almost saved at that point. So I've only good memories of it anyway.
Well, when we look over the careers of many really good actors, we see some fabulous things they were in and some things that they might have been a bit embarrassed to admit to having appeared in. But they subsidize the good things,
don't
they? Of course
they do, and I'm not embarrassed at all. You know, anything that helps you live is good.
You say that you've suffered maladies on opening nights. Like what?
Oh, like what? Nerves.
Really? Even after having done it for years and years?
Oh, terror. Absolute terror. Yes, yes, absolutely.
And you never get over that?
No.
And what are you afraid of, that you're going to do a lousy job?
Yes, I suppose so.
Have you had any major disasters?
No, not on the first night, no. but there might be one. I mean, that's the risk you take. It's a big, big gamble. And you want to be at your best. When you want to be too much, sometimes you are not. I mean, I think I've been at my best at matinees when there haven't been that many people in front, you know, and totally relaxed.
Because the pressure isn't on?
The pressure, yeah. And also, that's one of the reasons I don't really enjoy doing commercial theatre. And I haven't done much, if you look back on my career, because the financial pressure of it, you know, are they going to like it? Is it going to be well reviewed? Will it attract people? It's, of course, it is the theatre, and the theatre's been like that since Greek times. But it's a big gamble, and it's a big stress.
What about the time commitment? Although we're seeing more and more plays just on limited runs, that was not economically possible in the past. And you would sign for a play and then find yourself a year later saying the same lines. Some actors love it because they say they actually learn more and more about the character as they go on. But there has to be a boredom factor at some point.
Oh, yes, of course. Mine is very low. I haven't done a lot, what's called a long run, since I was in my 20s. And then I loved every minute of it. I couldn't wait to get to the theatre, etc. Now, it would be my idea of hell, quite honestly. Nor have I done it. 6 months maybe has been the limit.
Well, theatre's changed so much now. We see a lot of shows where people are mic'd, especially musicals. But I've even seen some dramas where people were mic'd.
Really?
And actors in the past. That, of course, part of the whole idea of being on stage is projecting to the back row.
Well, yes. I don't see the point of it. If you're going to be mic'd, you might as well broadcast it.
Well, but I'm sure that that's because so many of these actors began their careers on television or in
yes,
films.
Yes, I guess it is.
And there has to be a difference just in the way you deliver a line when you're mic'd and when you're not mic'd.
I don't know. I haven't done it. I would have thought so. Certainly as an audience, I haven't seen many straight plays that are mic'd. But I did see the Seagull in the park many years ago. I couldn't tell who was speaking because it was non-directional.
It was all coming out of a speaker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you done any Chekhov? Because
yes, two. I would like to have done more. I played twice Madame Branevskaya in The Cherry Orchard, whom I adore. And I played Sasha in Ivanov with Gielgud. But I would love to have played Masha or Irena or Olga or any of the three sisters.
Well, you've done a lot of Shakespeare. And Chekhov, those are, to me, those are the pinnacles. And then
Ibsen.
Ibsen, and then a lot of other very fine playwrights, but nothing like that.
Tennessee Williams, Eugene O'Neill. Mm-hmm. You know, I was so lucky.
I've
done both of them, yes. Well, The Streetcar Named Sidon in London. Mm-hmm. Great success for a long run. And A Long Day's Journey into Night, which was my dream to do, I did eventually at the ART in Cambridge.
It's often lamented that there are fewer roles for actresses over a certain age. How do you keep so busy?
I don't.
Are you finding it harder to get roles?
Oh, there, it is. It is. I mean, I have an interesting life. I travel and I see things and I do things, et cetera, et cetera. I keep busy and my life is full. If I were waiting for a role to come along, it would be extremely empty.
Have you ever wanted to direct or produce?
No, I have no idea.
You had led workshops on Shakespearean performance practice, but no?
No. I know what you mean. I did master classes, mm-hmm. which is quite different, with students. Mm-hmm. Which I enjoyed very much, and I found I was rather good at it, quite honestly. But no, I have no idea.
So now all that's left for you is playing queens?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Well, you were marvelous Queen Mary.
That was fun, yes. I didn't expect it to be anything much, because on paper, it's nothing.
Well, nobody could have predicted that film would become the kind of hit that it was.
No, and it is. It really is a wonderful movie.
I should mention that, once again, that you'll be in conversation with the film historian Foster Hirsch tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Film Forum. That's on at 209 West Houston Street. And I'm sorry we couldn't get to more of your story today, but people can go and hear it all tomorrow.
They'll hear it all. So nice to see you again.
Thank you so much, Claire Bloom.
Thank you.